Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
It's unholy fast. I broke so many laws in this car, and I'm going to break a lot more through the whole week I have it. Hello, and welcome back to the Plugged In Podcast, a weekly news show all about the future of transportation. I'm Patrick George, editor-in-chief of Inside EVs.
And I'm Tim Levin, senior reporter at Inside EVs. On this week's show, Patrick drives his dream EV, we share Tesla robotaxi predictions, and GM is going all in on V8s. But first, how's it going, man? How's your week been?
It's good. And you're going to find out that, like, dream doesn't always equal, like, a good thing. Like, sometimes your dreams turn out to be bad. And that's what we're gonna cover today. I'm good, Tim. I feel like Memorial Day weekend has thrown my week off in, like, really weird ways because the other day you were like, what do you want to do for the podcast this week? And I was like, what are you talking about? We just did that. I was like, oh, right. That was Thursday last week. So, okay. You know, time, it's very confusing.
It has been a whole week. Did you do anything fun for the long weekend?
Yeah, I went down to a friend's house who was grilling for Memorial Day. He smoked some ribs. Enjoyed some sunny weather here in upstate New York. So I can't complain, man. How about yourself? You do any fun?
Sweet. We went to Nevada City, which is a old kind of western like mining town in Northern California. Really cute. We like ate good food. We swam in a river. It was really nice.
What did you have there? What was so good about Nevada City? Tell me more. I love Northern California. Like, that's one of my favorite parts of the country. So if you've stumbled onto something awesome, give me the details.
Yeah, I mean, don't everybody go there because it's like kind of quaint and very cute, and not exactly teeming with people yet.
Yeah.
But no, it's like everything there is from like the mid 1800s. All this like old, you know, it looks like a movie set basically, but it's an actual town. There's like one nice hotel there we stayed at. We got a great meal. I ate Wagyu beef, which was very tasty. I recommend it a lot. And as you'll read about on InsideEVs.com shortly, practically the only EV charger anywhere remotely near there is a Tesla supercharger that I went to in the Chevy Blazer EV that I was driving, which was an awesome experience. It was actually my first time. Kind of embarrassingly so. I haven't, since Tesla started really opening up the supercharger network to other brands, I have not been to a supercharger in a non-Tesla car. So that was a first, and it worked really well.
You know, when you're able to do it, it really does kind of save your ass. And like, I was just visiting family down in Texas, and like, I rented a Mustang Mach-E while I was in town. And like, yeah, that's my go-to now. If you have the adapter in your car set up to do that, and not all the brands are yet, like if you can charge the Tesla station, like it's going to work and it's going to be fine. It's and they're everywhere. So like, give credit where it's due. It's like the best thing they ever did. And it's awesome.
Yeah, it's incredible. Like I that's kind of where I landed after I did it. I was like, oh, I think I'm just going to like only go to Tesla superchargers now, like just not mess around with the Electrify Americas and all them. I was looking at the map and I was like, oh my God, the only charger nearby is a supercharger. I hope to God there is an adapter in this car. I hope to God Chevy gave me an adapter. I was like digging through the trunk and yes, there was one. It's totally saved the day and maybe my marriage.
And maybe your marriage too. Yeah. Elon Musk out there doing good in the world as always. That's awesome. You know?
Okay. You want to get into the news?
Let's get into the news.
Okay. Yeah, so I understand you finally got behind the wheel of something you were really looking forward to, something you actually almost bought with your own money.
Yeah, man, a big day at our house recently because we finally got to get into a Volvo EX30. Finally, after almost 2 years from when it was first unveiled. And, you know, I kind of forgot this until I was in it. The U.S. debut in New York is where you and I met each other, actually, in IRL for the first time.
Yeah. And then a few months later, you brought me over here to Inside EVs.
Yeah, really sorry about that. but anyway, you know, the EX30 was something that I was actually really excited about for a long time. And, you know, it got teased really heavily by Volvo back in 2023. And when they unveiled it, finally, it was like this like long sought unicorn of a car. This like dream car. It was like an affordable electric car that didn't seem to suck and wasn't like slow or just like, you know, miserable to live with. It was from like a real company like Volvo. And it was just, everyone was so excited about it, man. Like it was, you know, it's a small thing. It's kind of like a tall hatchback more than anything else. But, you know, the interior is really pared down. There's very few buttons on it. It's all centralized through the screen. They did all these different things to cut costs and use like recycled materials throughout. And like, I always thought the vibe it had was like a Tesla, but made by IKEA, kind of. Like it had this kind of like whimsical Scandinavian thing going on. And it was supposed to be $35,000. Before any tax incentives or anything. And I always thought that was so cool. Like, what did you think when you saw it?
Yeah, I remember also being really excited about this car. Like, the thing that sticks out to me is now I've been seeing them around, actually, Berkeley. We can talk about that. But the thing that I always remember is that interior. Like, I remember getting in it and I was like, oh, this is like, yeah, it's like that Tesla minimalism, but executed by like a real car company that with a little more finesse, you know, like it has a big screen, not a lot of buttons, but in a really cool and kind of Scandinavian way, not just a like we took out everything and gave you just a screen way. Right.
Which is also a thing, unfortunately. So like I loved it. It also comes in like fun colors, like this like bright yellow and stuff like that. And, you know, then I took the job at Inside EVs, and I knew I wanted to buy one soon, obviously. So that seemed like it. And I plunked down $500 of my own money as a refundable deposit. And a few months later, it got delayed because key to that $35,000 starting price was the fact that the Volvo EX30 is made in China. And many of our listeners, readers may know this already, but in case you don't, Volvo is owned by China's Geely Group. And over the years, Volvo has sold some Chinese-built cars in the United States, but not very many. And like this was going to be like the big push from kind of not just them, but like any big automaker from like a Chinese-made car, specifically a Chinese-made EV. Like, you know, Tesla makes a lot of cars in China. Those are not exported here, but Volvo's like, we're going for it, baby. And at the time, there were 27.5% tariffs on Chinese made cars, and Volvo's like, nah, it's cool, we got this, we're good, don't worry about it. And then, you know, a few months after that, around this time last year, actually, the Biden administration, RIP, hit Volvo with hit the entire industry rather with 100% tariffs on Chinese made EVs. So like as a national security measure, you know, the Biden administration, which was often accused of like being soft on China, like they hit them really hard. And it was like, anything that's a car made in China that's going to be sold here is going to have 100% tariffs on it. So Volvo went quiet for a while, and they announced that the car was going to be delayed until God knows when.
Yeah. And it really didn't seem certain that it was going to come to America. We asked them about it. It was all pretty up in the air. And then meanwhile, the EX30 has been selling really well in other countries, especially in Europe.
Yeah. Last summer sometime, it was the top selling EV in Europe at one point behind the Tesla Model Y, which is a really impressive feat. Like any car that pulls that off has the juice, you know, like the Mach-E does that, like the Hyundais and like the Chevy Equinox EV. Like that's when you're like getting into like power hitter, like affordable car for the masses levels when you can do that. So yeah, it felt like we were really missing out on this thing. I got my deposit back after it got delayed till TBD, and end up leasing a Kia EV6 instead, which I really liked. But now finally, the EX30 is here, and it's still made in China too, and they're dealing with the tariff situation.
Right, which means it's not that cheap anymore. The only one for sale in America right now is the Twin Motor Performance that starts at $44,900.
Yeah, that is definitely not $35,000. And nor was the car I was testing, which with options was closer to $49,000. So, like, really, really kind of a bummer. It's like, you know, what was supposed to be like this great compact, cheap car that a lot of people could afford ends up being just kind of like another expensive-ish entry luxury like European car. And it really doesn't drive like a $50,000 car at all. I'm sorry to say, like, it had 400 horsepower, so it is really quick, as EVs tend to be. You know, 69 kilowatt hour battery, so it's like medium sized. I think the one I had, the range was rated at 253 miles of range, which is not great, but like it delivered that. Like it was very consistent at giving me exactly that, which I liked. The fast charging was very solid, but it feels kind of cheap inside. It's noisy. You get a lot of wind noise and tire noise, and like it's, I don't know, man. What I realized was, like, you and me looking at that car in New York, like, oh my God, this car is so clever. Like they've stripped out all the buttons and they've cut everything down. They pared it down. It's so simplified. Like, seeing that as a thing that you like look at and understand, like as a business reporter, like why that happens, and like owning that car and living with it every day, those are two very different things. Because after a while, just like how pared down it was kind of pissed me off. And like everything goes through the screen, air conditioning, stereo controls, just like, you know, all kinds of features, the whole nine, much like a Tesla does. But like, again, to Tesla's credit, like the Volvo software is not that good. It's kind of buggy. It's weird. Like my wife drove it a bunch and it just never worked with Apple CarPlay right with her. And I think she came close to like putting her fist through it a few times through the screen, which would have been really cool to see, honestly. But like, they don't make it easy for you to drive a car where all the controls have been as pared down as they are. Oh, and let me tell you this too. I forgot to put this in our notes, but this is kind of hilarious, is that it has a really aggressive sensor to detect when it thinks you're not paying attention to the road. Like if you're on your phone or if you are wearing sunglasses or you just are kind of like looking off the distance or something, it'll sort of beep at you. And you have to turn that system off every time you get in the car. It defaults to on every single time.
Okay, God forbid you want to wear sunglasses in your car.
Or you're paying attention and you just like look down the road to where your exit is because like you know what you're doing. There's no traffic around. But like it dings you for that. And okay, I applaud Volvo for being safe. But then everything control-wise is centralized through the screen. And the voice controls like only do so much. So every time you go to do something you need to do, like adjust the air conditioning controls or the stereo or whatever, it yells at you and beeps at you to pay attention. It's like, what did you want? Like if I wouldn't have a problem if you gave me buttons, but you didn't, and now you're yelling at me and no one's happy about the situation. So it does suck. I'm kind of bummed. I was really excited about this thing, and I think there's a lot I would forgive for $35,000, but for $50,000, it's like, man, this ain't it.
Yeah, and does it also? I seem to remember that it doesn't have a gauge cluster, like your speed and everything like that is also in the central screen, just like at the top, right?
Yeah, also Tesla style. Nothing in front of the driver, just a little bar for the sensors that monitor your eyes. And like on a Tesla, that takes some getting used to after a while. I didn't really care about that too much. But I guess I would prefer having gauges or something in front of me. But it's really minimalist, often to a fault. And again, like that's clever when it's like cheap, but when it's priced as much as other Volvos that have better controls, like you kind of, it stops making sense.
Right. But the cheaper one is coming someday, right? The single motor, the mythical like $35,000 one.
Yes, maybe. In theory, Volvo announced earlier this year that they were going to start building the EX30 in Belgium instead of China to solve a lot of problems, including the fact that like the Europeans aren't thrilled about like Chinese EVs coming in. They're hitting China with tariffs too. So we're going to build in Belgium. But it's not problem solved because now the Trump administration, after Biden hit it with tariffs, now Trump's hitting it with tariffs. The Trump administration is hitting the European Union with tariffs soon too, which are probably going to spike the prices on the Belgian-made car as well.
Right. I mean, and I mean, the tariffs are like impossible to keep track of, to be honest. I think I feel fine saying that because I've seen even like people who like are paid to understand trade are like, yeah, like this, it's like way too much to understand. But like, as far as I understand, there are tariffs potentially coming on the EU, but also just like the 25% tariffs on imported cars in general, blanket from anywhere, that would also hit this car. So like, they could stack in really unfortunate ways, I think, for the EX30.
Yeah. So like, the damn thing just can't catch a break. And like, even Volvo's CEO is like, look, we may not be able to sell this thing in America at all. He gave an interview to Reuters recently, and he said, and I quote, "That would be, of course, almost impossible." So I don't know what's going to happen to it. Maybe we'll get some trade deal with the EU where this works out more favorably, and that version of the car can still come to America. But like, I don't think it looks great. And I feel like this thing got like so much hype 2 years ago when it was coming out, and like, we've been writing about it a little bit last couple of days, and like, no one really seems to care about it anymore. And I noticed that only about 600 or 700 of them are for sale in America right now. So it's really kind of a lot more tepid than like this like next big thing kind of Tesla Model 3 deal that Volvo was going to aim for in America.
Yeah, it sucks because, like you said, this was one that was kind of going to be like the EV that everybody's been waiting for. Like, price is such a big hurdle when it comes to EVs.
Totally.
And like, there are a ton of other ones that you can buy for like 50 grand, you know, 50 grand, 55 grand, 60 grand. Everybody's been waiting for this one that's like really good, you know, really great range and stylish and everything in the like 30,000s, right? And that's what this was supposed to be. And now it's like, where is the affordable car for the masses? I don't really know. It's between the tariffs and other policies, you know, this dream is kind of being pushed down the road. You know, with the tariffs, like, who knows what happens to the Chevy Equinox EV, which is also like a really great, really good value car. That was our EV of the year last year.
Yeah.
Like, that's made in Mexico. It's getting hit with tariffs. It's also gets a $7,500 price hike effectively because if the EV tax credit goes away. So it seems like, I think everybody kind of thought that this year, this, you know, the mid 2020s would be when we'd finally get these cheap EVs, and it doesn't seem like it's happening.
No. And like, another one that comes to mind too is the Kia EV3, which was unveiled a while ago, in South Korea. And I drove it over there. I really liked that car a lot. And like, they're targeting like 35 grand for that too. And now it's also really MIA, and currently it's built in South Korea. And Kia doesn't like talking about this, but like, I don't think they know where to build the thing anymore, because like, okay, you get to build in Mexico, like that would probably keep the price down. But then now you got tariffs. You build it in America, but I don't think it's gonna be 35 grand unless they're like willing to take an absolute bath on it. So it's kind of like, pick the trade-off you want here. You know, I think everybody would agree we want American manufacturing jobs. Like, that's objectively a good thing. But it's like, in this space too, you're not going to get to that really cheap price point until we've built out the battery infrastructure, especially in America. We're making batteries more cheaply than we are making them here. And like, that depends on EV demand going up. And so like, it's you're kind of stuck between like a rock and a hard place here. So I don't know what's going to happen. Maybe Volvo should just build the EX30 in America. Like iPhones are going to get built here soon.
Maybe. Yeah. It seemed like it was all going the right direction. Like you mentioned, the battery costs, everything kind of scaling up, the costs coming down. Now who knows?
Yeah.
This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also, that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Indeed. Well, one thing that we now know is coming soon, also maybe, is Tesla's Robotaxi launch in my former home of Austin, Texas. So what do we know? We found out some new information about Robotaxis, like right as this we started recording today, didn't we, Tim?
Also maybe is a good way of putting it.
Okay, so after about a decade of promises around autonomy and self-driving, Tesla says it'll finally be launching its quasi-driverless cars onto the streets of Austin, Texas, on June 12th, we found out today. This is a big moment for Tesla if it can pull this off, and that's remains a really big if here. But what do we know so far about the Robotaxi rollout in a few weeks?
Yeah, this has been a long time coming. For anybody who's been following Tesla or EVs, you know this. Tesla has sold something called full self-driving for years, in quotes, because it's not actually full self-driving. This requires you to sit in the driver's seat and pay attention to it. Now, for the first time, it says it'll take the person out of the driver's seat and, you know, deploy a autonomous taxi service, kind of like Waymo has been doing for a few years now. So what we know so far is Musk recently said that it'll start with around 10 Model Ys in Austin, geofenced to the safest parts of the city. It'll be very closely monitored by remote operators and grow from there. After that, you know, in typical Musk fashion, he has some pretty bold, big predictions for how it's going to go. 1,000 cars within a few months. And he told CNBC that by the end of next year, they'll probably have hundreds of thousands or over a million Teslas doing self-driving in the U.S. So that's kind of where it stands so far. What do you think? Any predictions here, Patrick, for how this is going to go?
Yeah, you know, I rolled my eyes a second ago just because of what you said, like 10 cars in a tiny, like, geofenced area and, like, the safest parts of Austin, which is, like, I think kind of a little bit of a dog whistle in some ways. You know, and we know because we've seen the job postings all over LinkedIn.
I think you mean safest streets, by the way. Like, safest, like, yeah, I think you mean safest streets. He's talking about traffic and intersections and
stuff. I hope we can give Elon the benefit of the doubt there after everything. We'll see. But, you know, it's a really small rollout in every like sense of that word. We know from all the LinkedIn posts that have been out there that they're hiring a ton of human like teleoperators or human remote minders who can control the cars if something goes wrong, which is, I mean, like, that's a good backstop. Sure. You know, we think that they're going to have humans kind of minding them at the outset, and so, like, when you get in, it won't be like a full-blown like Waymo experience, which I want to talk about in a second, where the car is totally driverless. So I don't know, it's like, after all this time and all these years of promises, and like I just, he's been saying this stuff since I had a lot less gray hair on my head, let me tell you that. It's like, this is what we get. It's like 10 cars in some tiny area, and like it's being babysat by humans. Like, everything's got to start somewhere, but it feels a bit underwhelming from this so far, right?
Yeah, I agree. It's like, you know, Musk and Tesla, they've been talking for so long about this generalized solution to self-driving, right? Kind of like what AGI is for AI. Like, literally, you know, generalized as in, Waymos only work in certain places. They only work in parts of San Francisco and the other cities they're in. Our self-driving cars are going to be so much better because you could plop that thing anywhere in the country and eventually anywhere in the world, and like, it'll just understand the roads and it'll just work anywhere. And that is not what we're seeing here. Like you say, I think it's a good thing, obviously. Like, they're talking a lot about safety. They are, you know, Musk is definitely tempering expectations for this. He's like, it's not going to be, you know, all at once. But at the same time, yeah, it's like, this is not the like flip a switch and have a million robo taxis moment that they've been talking about for years. This is like a pilot, like a very limited pilot that, like, it seems like we won't even necessarily know how self-driving it even is. If there are, you know, we don't know the extent to which these teleoperators are going to be involved in the driving. So, like, even if it starts working, you know, even if it seems to be working really well for the first like month or two, are the cars driving themselves? Are they not? We won't really know.
Yeah. And it's like this company's really struggling with car sales right now. And he has sworn up and down that, like, you know, the declining sales at Tesla are a flash in the pan, that the world was just waiting for the new Model Y. Like, we'll see about that, right? We know that everybody who wanted a Cybertruck at this point has probably bought one. And I bring this up to say, because, like, this company still makes its revenue selling cars. It does. I'm sort of, I know that we'd make promises about the future of autonomy, and that has to whatever start somewhere if that's even achievable. But, like, what's, like, the revenue pathway here, right? Like, if you're thinking of Tesla as a business and, like, why you invest in it, because so many people who are really, like, diehard Tesla people are, like, really in deep on that stock price. Like, what is the path here that's going to, like, make this company money when it's struggling to sell cars, which is where its money comes from right now? So, like, I don't know. I struggle to come up with anything original to say here, just because this has been delayed so long and it's been written about to death and covered so extensively. But, you know, the big thing too for me is, like, you know, this is stuff that, like, Waymo is already doing, what, a 100x version of, you know, like, I mean, they're in a bunch of cities right now. They're already in Austin. They do not have humans behind the wheel. Before we started recording today, we were, all three of us were saying, like, how good the Waymo cars are when we've been in them, and they're, like, getting better. So, like, they're kind of, like, really late to a game that they've already declared victory in. It's like, oh, this is the future of the company. But also, we're about 10 years behind Google. So, I don't know. I'm depending on how the pilot goes and everything, I would like you/me/us to go down to Austin and, like, try it at some point. I don't know how that's going to work. Like, I'm genuinely curious about it. But it just, there's a lot to prove after everything here.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Waymo is already doing 250,000 paid rides per week across several cities. They have about 1,500 cars doing self-driving trips. So they're really far ahead here. And, like, as we've said, like, Tesla thinks that its edge here is that the cars are cheaper, basically. Cheaper and, like, easier to scale. This whole business will be easier to scale. That all depends on if they can actually make a car that drives itself. And that is something that they haven't proven yet. Like I said, I guess we are treading over, like, you know, this isn't terribly original, but yeah, like, they haven't shown that they can put cars out in public that don't have a driver in them yet. And Waymo spent years, like, Waymo is way ahead of everybody else, but they also spent years testing in various cities. First with safety drivers, then without safety drivers and no passengers. And then finally, after a lot of testing, they got to where they could have no driver and also, like, public rides, actually paying passengers. And Tesla seems like it's trying to just, like, fast forward through a lot of that because they've had full self-driving in the hands of customers for years who have been, like, driving and testing it. And, like, I don't think that's the same thing as having professional test drivers actually testing these cars.
I had no idea Waymo was up to 250,000 paid rides per week. So a million a month, which is insane. I had no idea it was that high. And it's also, like, I think there's a bit of a fallacy to this argument where Tesla's like, we can make the cars cheaper. It's like, okay, well, show us the Cybercab. Let's see you do it, because you've been promising a more affordable car also since forever, and that hasn't happened too. But it's like, at the end of the day, Google is not a car company. Like, Google adds this system to existing vehicles. And we know that, like, they're in talks with Toyota, at the very least, and probably other car companies, to find ways to add that technology or versions of it to, like, passenger cars in America. Like, they're going to try and commercialize it that way. Like, well, it probably won't be full-blown, like, Waymo experience, but, like, it can make autonomy on a Toyota you own probably better over time, is my guess, right? So, like, if you follow that to its logical conclusion, then this is technology that can be applied to many different vehicles. And, like, Yeah, they're using old Jaguar I-Paces for now that are probably kind of expensive-ish, but like they're moving to Hyundai Ioniq 5 soon. The price difference between that and a Model Y probably isn't that huge, I'm guessing. There are more affordable cars coming out, more affordable EVs, supposedly anyway, to our earlier point, coming out. Yeah. Like, it's not like they're beholden to like making the car cheaper when they can add to other stuff. Like they're doing that totally driverless like Zeekr van thing we've seen by the Chinese car company Zeekr is going to make that for them. So I don't know, man. And it's, you don't want to see like one company have a monopoly in any space, just especially something as important as self-driving. But it's just like there's just a lot on the line here to prove. So we'll see.
Yeah, I think there's also questions about whether Tesla can actually make this business work in the sense that like Waymo is partnering with Uber. So like in Austin, you go on the Uber app and that's how you get your Waymo. So like Tesla is kind of going under the assumption that like, oh, everybody's just going to like download the Tesla app and go there to get rides. Whereas you actually have, you know, Uber has this huge dominant position in rideshare, and they're just partnering up with all the other autonomous vehicle companies, you know, Waymo, and they have other partnerships, and they're like, yeah, you'll just go on Uber and you'll get a ride with a driver, or you'll get a ride that's driverless, but like ultimately it's all going to go through the app that like you already use and you already have on your phone. So especially given all the controversy around Tesla, like the idea that, you know, all of America is going to suddenly download Tesla app and like use that for instead of Uber or instead of Lyft, feels like a hard sell.
Yeah, that's like the last thing I worry about here too, or not worry about. I mean, that's, I don't care one way or another. I just write about this stuff and then talk about it with you on the internet radio show. But like, okay, if people are turning away from the Tesla brand because, as most people would tell you, like Elon has kind of alienated that core demographic, what guarantee does he have that like they're going to flock to Tesla robo-taxis? And like there is this, he has said versions of this, and I'm definitely paraphrasing here. It's like it's going to get so good that people will, you'll have no choice but to use it. It'll be like wanting to take a horse when you could take an automobile instead. It's like, of course you would. Of course you would. Why wouldn't you use it? It's so good. And that's where I think Elon has his greatest weakness, is when he fails to understand people. And he understands technology and systems, and he's very good at that. But like, he doesn't understand like the human heart. And like he was giving another on his media tour again that he's doing all of a sudden. He was talking to the Washington Post and he was just like, yeah, people were torching Teslas. Like, gosh, like why would you do that? That's so uncool. And it's like, I don't know, man. Like I know a lot of people who are federal workers who like lost their jobs because of you. Like, we expect everyone to be thrilled about that and just keep like, oh, but you know, all's forgiven. There's the new Model Y with a horizontal light bar. Sick. Thanks. You know, like that's, I don't think he gets people a lot. And I think that's where this is really going to run into some trouble.
Yeah.
You know?
Which we don't condone, by the way. We don't condone torching Teslas.
No.
And to that point, like,
sounds like a lot of work too. And that's a bad day for your fire department. And you know, yeah, just don't do it.
I feel like all of this, you know, a lot of these like questions are so far out in the future just because like they still haven't, like I said, like they first need to prove that they can have like a handful of them driving around without people, and then like, okay, we can talk about, will the business work, can they expand to other cities, whatever. They haven't done the first part yet.
Yeah,
but to your point about Musk not really understanding like how people work, I think the whole idea, like a central part of this business proposition is like he always calls it a mix of Airbnb and Uber. So like you as a Tesla owner will be able to add your Tesla Model Y or Model 3 to the fleet, and like it'll take passengers around for you while you're at work and like earn you side income.
Yeah.
And that'll mean that the, you know, $50,000 price for your Tesla Model Y is like a drop in the bucket with the, you know, compared to the lifetime earnings of having a robo-taxi. That's your personal thing. And like, I wouldn't do, who wants to do that? Who wants to have their, like people, you need your car. You don't want, who wants to like have your insurance cost go up? Maybe it gets in a crash, either on its own or with some other car. Like screw that. Like, I don't think that people are going to be lining up to add their personal cars to this Tesla fleet, to be honest.
Yeah, and it's also like, you know, that vision of the roving robo-taxi thing, like, it makes sense in theory, but it's a really urban idea. Like, talk to people who live out in the country like I do, or people who live in suburbs, which is a lot of America. And it's like the idea that like people aren't going to have their own cars anymore. They aren't going to have their own pickup trucks down in Texas. Like, and it's just everything's going to be roving pods everywhere is very hard for me to believe. Now, if you live in, you know, like San Francisco or New York or LA or something like that, there's a lot of upsides to that, but that's a tough sell for a lot of people. So, so we'll see. It's like, again, I think if they had like, okay, everyone was cool with the CEO mostly, and like they have like 8 new models coming out, and they have multiple trucks and a bigger 3-row SUV and all this stuff, and like their business is good, but also like we're exploring robotaxis, and over time we think it's going to go this way. I don't think anybody would be saying anything, but they're really betting a lot on an unproven future. And like, as a rule, I try not to bet against Tesla, because like they've proven be wrong as a critic before, but yeah, we're going to see, because a lot's on the line this time.
Yeah, we'll see. It's and they, you know, the technology just still doesn't seem to be there, at least from what we know publicly. Like, we're going to be keeping close eye on how this goes, because like you look at YouTube videos or people testing FSD in their cars, and like it still makes weird mistakes. Like, it still goes into like oncoming traffic, or goes the wrong way down a one way, or blows a red light, even on the latest version. And so it's hard to look at this, you know, 1 million robotaxis by next year and see anything different from like when he said that in 2019 and it didn't happen. So I don't know, maybe we take like a way too skeptical take on this, but I don't know that Tesla has given us a reason to be like super optimistic about this.
Yeah. We'll find out June 12th, I guess.
Yep. All right. General Motors. Have you heard of them?
I have. General Motors. Yes. Yes.
Yeah,
I'm familiar with his gallant service to America in the Crimean War, which I don't think America was in. I don't know. I went to public school in Texas, man.
He served alongside Colonel Sanders, actually.
Yes.
Not many people know this.
Yes. And General So, yes.
Moving on, GM is investing $888 million in its Buffalo, New York propulsion facility to make its next generation V8 engines. So why exactly are we talking about this on an EV podcast, Patrick?
Yes, and these are V8 engines that run on gasoline, not hybrid, at least not as far as we know, or any other sort of zero emission stuff. But you know, GM today is getting a lot of praise or heat on this move, depending on who you ask, and it's because it's a really heavy reversal to make V8 engines at this plant that was originally supposed to make something very different. Right.
GM had previously planned to invest $300 million to build EV motors at that factory, and now it's doing V8s instead. There's been a lot of different reactions to this. For example, the Daily Caller, which is the right-wing website that apparently also covers cars now, said that GM is, quote, shifting its focus away from electric vehicle motors and back toward torque and horsepower, because, as everybody knows, EVs are measured in DEIs per socialism, right? Right, Patrick?
Yeah, well said. And like, this is why this is so stupid, because this is just like, once again, like we've made partisan nonsense out of like stuff that doesn't need to be partisan. And like, that's not even like that kind of low-key diss that's in there isn't even true. It's like, well, now we're focusing on horsepower and torque. It's like, idiot, I drove home last night in an Audi e-tron RS GT, and like, it has 925 horsepower. It's unholy fast. I broke so many laws in this car, and I'm going to break a lot more through the whole week I have it. And like, the handling is out of this world. It just grips, because it can send, you know, so much power to all four wheels, like so much faster and more efficiently than a gas car can. And it's just like, okay, cool. Like, you don't believe in this stuff. You don't believe that this is the future performance. Like, I'll see you at the drag strip. Let's go. Let's find a quarter mile somewhere, and I'm going to leave you with some hurt feelings. Like, you know, that's kind of, it's just such an outrageous and dated thought to think, oh, they're just golf carts. You know, they're not powerful. Like, sure, man. Like, and, you know, as long as I got this Audi open challenge to anybody, you know?
Yeah, EVs have their own issues. Horsepower and torque is not one of them.
Yeah.
But this does seem to be another way that EV makers are kind of recalibrating. Like, we saw these headlines that were like, you know, GM is walking back its EV plans or scaling back, and it's focusing more on V8s. And like, I think in general, we're kind of allergic to those kinds of headlines just because they generally are like a little bit exaggerated, right? In this case, yeah, they kind of are recalibrating, like a lot of companies are right now.
Yeah, let's look at what GM has done well here. And, you know, I think it actually, as far as like quote unquote, like legacy automakers, it has done pretty well. It's now the number two EV seller in America behind Tesla. It's poached a ton of battery and software experts, including from Tesla. And like historically, that's not really a thing General Motors does. It's not big on like outside hiring. It's now the largest original equipment manufacturer of battery cells in North America, period, through its various partnerships. So like, they kind of realize that like, if you're going to win this stuff long game, like you've got to get batteries right. You've got to make a lot of batteries. You've got to make them cheaply, efficiently at scale, and then your costs go down. It's like, I think GM's doing really well on that front. Problem is that's the long game. And what we're talking about right now, gas trucks are what pay the bills at General Motors. And, you know, it's easy to think of this as like horsepower and torque and stuff. And like, I, you know, credit where it's due, I still love the Corvette. Like, you know, it's a great, great V8 engine in that car. But we're mostly talking about gas truck engines here. We're talking about GM gets most of its profits from like the Silverado and the Escalade, the Suburban, and like GMC Denalis and things like that. And it is not in a position where like it can just pivot to EVs on its most profitable cars, right? Like, this company, I think, is doing a lot well right now, but it is going to face a kind of reckoning at some point where it's like, you want a zero emission future, an electric future, but like, you're primarily a gas truck company. And that's going to require like moving to a lot of different cars and making a lot of different cars that they don't necessarily make right now or are good at making right now. So I don't know what that future looks like, but for now, they've got to keep the lights on. And I think they're doing that with, you know, a next generation of V8 engines for, you know, the folks that aren't ready to go electric yet.
Yeah. It's, you know, the interesting thing is like, GM, it seems like EVs aren't really ready for the full-size truck application yet. Like, GM can't just like start making Silverados and Sierras as EVs and have just as many people want to buy them. And like, it's doing that. It is building those vehicles, but they're not selling nearly as well as the gas-powered ones, just because like, they're way more expensive.
Yeah.
They can't tow as far. They can't go as far in general. So it's kind of in this, yeah, it's like, what does it do next? Like, does it basically have to sell gas trucks until EV technology gets good enough that like, you can buy a GMC Sierra for the equivalent price, whether it's electric or gas, and like, it can go just as far, it has great batteries, it can tow super far. It is this weird moment. Or do they have to, yeah, start going back to building smaller cars that like, work better for EVs? I don't really know.
It's also like, you know, from an emissions and like gas use perspective, like, it is disappointing because like last week we were talking about Toyota, and like, to its credit, it's like, it is becoming like a hybrid and EV car company. Like, the RAV4 is a hybrid now. Most of those trucks, like the you know, Land Cruiser and so on, like, those were hybrids. Okay, like, where's General Motors at on this? And I think it'd be one thing of like, yeah, we're making V8s or big V6 for trucks, but they're electrified in some way. You know, like, they were plug-in or not. Like, we'll use less gas and probably have more power. I don't know the answer to that because, like, I'm not a high-ranking General Motors executive or accountant who has done all the math that must bear this out for them. But, like, it would be cool to see that company get more serious about like hybrid vehicles too, because like, I think that, especially on the truck side of things, like, that kind of has a bit of a better value proposition for people than like fully electric trucks do in some ways for now. So
yeah.
We'll see, you know?
Yeah. And we know they are bringing some kind of plug-in hybrids, but like, for now, yeah, like, GM was in this GM had decided to skip over hybrids, right?
Yeah.
And just go straight to EVs from gas cars. And that was a different tack than like somebody like Ford or Toyota or these other companies. And now they're kind of having to, you know, they kind of back themselves into a corner a little bit where they're like, oh, well, oops, we kind of invested really heavily in EVs, which is great. Like they're not investing in EVs just because demand is slowing down a little bit. Like they have put a lot into this and will continue to, but they're in this moment where, yeah, EVs aren't growing as quickly as they thought and they've got to keep making money. And so how do you do that? You do that through the V8 trucks.
One of these days, like, I want to figure out how, like, every car company on earth just thought that, like, they could just totally pivot off gas by, like, the end of this decade. Like, what consultants, like, took you for a ride here? Like, how did they all come to this conclusion? It was just this weird sort of groupthink moment. And, like, again, as an EV fan, as someone who's, you know, an environmentalist, like, I wish that was the case. But I think a lot of them realize, like, how much, like, battery costs enter into this and how, like, hard it is to make batteries locally and at scale, which is most of your costs. And then also they kind of just expected the charging infrastructure to just pop up all around them. I think third is like nobody seemed to anticipate how weirdly partisan EV stuff would get in like a big chunk of the country like we just saw. So I don't know. So there was a lot of like math that didn't math in these assumptions. And now they're trying to, you know, figure out how it all adds up the right way. You know, it's like, yeah, I get the challenge, right? Like, how do you have this right mix of like electric vehicles for the future and the cars that pay the bills right now while investing in what you need for the first thing? It's not an easy position to be in.
Yeah. And especially like, you know, ideally they would just see it as the future and be like, yeah, we're just going to like, you know, who cares about the V8s? We're just going to go in on EVs because that's what everybody's going to be buying in like 20 years. That's not how they work. And especially not now that these policies have gone away, right?
Yeah.
We talked last week a bit about this kind of pullback, this slowdown. And it's like, yeah, you know, when California's EV mandate by 2035 is kind of uncertain and EPA emissions rules are kind of uncertain, yeah, maybe you'll let your V8s ride it out a little longer rather than like spending money on currently unprofitable electric vehicles. So like we're, you know, the country is kind of setting businesses up to make these decisions.
It's like buy some time almost, you know,
yeah,
for between a future you know is coming and like the day that like I believe where like they're going to have to fight with BYD on their home turf in America. Like, I do think that will happen. And it's like, that's a day they've got to be ready for, you know?
Yeah. One interesting thing that I didn't really think about, but makes perfect sense. I saw one analyst that we know well, Sam Fiorani, in the news. He said, basically like, look at this, the scale of this investment, $900 million. Like that's going to take a while to pay off. And so you can imagine that V8s are going to be in the GM lineup well into the 2030s. Like these are not, it's not like going away anytime soon in place of, you know, it's not going away anytime soon and going to be replaced by EVs, which when you think about it that way, like, yeah, not as fast a transition, perhaps, as we all thought.
Yeah. And this has been the part of the podcast where Tim and me tell people how to run their giant global multi-trillion dollar car companies. Welcome, everybody.
Yeah. Speaking of car executives, Mary Barra, GM CEO, actually commented on this week at a Wall Street Journal event, and she said something that I think was telling. You know, we hear a lot of companies talk about a multi-pathway future. You know, we'll give people whatever they want, everybody will have choice. And she said something a little bit different, which is that they still believe in an all EV future, and that, quote, I think EVs are fundamentally better. Which I think was interesting to hear from somebody like her. You know, EVs are just a better technology, and that's where it's going to go in the future.
That is really refreshing, because like you hear a lot of car executives like kind of scoff at this stuff or like openly say like, well, we're being dragged into this crap by bureaucrats in Brussels and California, which we hate. So, but we're gonna do it anyway because we've got to. And like I think she is a true believer, and she's right what she said. So it's nice to hear the CEO of General Motors like be up and out front about that. So good on you, Mary. All right, now it's time for Plus Minus, our segment where we talk about who's up and who's down in the EV world. Tim, who you got for me this week?
I have a minus, and maybe it's more of a, maybe we should add like a WTF, you know, plus minus or WTF, because this is kind of a WTF moment. We had this story this week about the new DeLorean Motor Company, right? This is kind of like a reboot version of DeLorean, which made the famous Back to the Future car, and they have a kind of perpetually in development EV that they claim they'll sell someday. One of these, you know, I think dubious EV startups, in my opinion. And now we know a little bit about how you can reserve your place in line, which was like the weirdest thing I've ever read. You have to buy $2,500 worth of a cryptocurrency that is equal in value to the American dollar.
What year is oh my God.
I know. Doesn't this feel like between like
2021 stuff? Yeah.
Between the like weird EV startup and like NFTs. This really should be like 5 years ago, but this is today, folks. Yeah, you got to buy $2,500 worth of this dollar backed cryptocurrency. In order to hold that crypto, you need to have a Slush wallet, which is a digital wallet run by a company called Sui. And then you have to buy an NFT with that in order to reserve a spot in line for your DeLorean. The bad news is that once you buy that NFT, like most of these car companies will, these deposits are refundable. So you just put down like $100, or in Patrick's case, like for the EX30, you put down a few hundred bucks. And like, if you don't end up buying it, you just get the money back.
Yeah.
Not the case with the DeLorean. Once you buy that NFT, the only way to get your money back is to sell it to somebody else who wants a spot in line. This was like so bizarre. I can't believe that this is real, but it is.
it's insane. Well, my plus this week is me personally, because I'm buying the DeLorean crypto. I'm gonna go for it. You know, the Volvo deposit didn't work out, but I got a good feeling about this one, Tim. Hey, like totally unrelated. But would you like to buy my place in line for the DeLorean?
Yeah, dude, that's definitely going to the moon. DeLorean NFT go to the moon.
Yeah, the future, baby. It's great. You know, we're
the future, dude. Baby. It's 2021.
Good luck to all involved. Well, thanks for listening to the Plugged In podcast from Inside EVs. We'll be back next Friday. Today's show was produced by Michael Perkins and is brought to you by the Motorsport Network.
Make sure to follow us wherever you get your podcasts and send us your questions about the EV world to podcast@insideevs.com. See you next time.
Thanks very much.